through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Things I did not expect to happen in this 2020 offseason. Seahawks free agent, or excuse me, not free agent, but addition, we'll say. Quentin Dunbar accused of being an accomplice to a robbery, and then witnesses retract their statement mysteriously. Then his lawyer may or may not be crooked, may or may not have paid somebody off. And then just this morning we get the news that prosecutors have declined to charge Dunbar for, quote, insufficient evidence. What? What? And meanwhile, his buddy DeAndre Baker is being charged with robbery and may face 10 years to life if convicted. We'll see where that goes. But in the meantime, Quentin Dunbar, as far as the legal system, has gotten off. He's a free man. Now, as far as the NFL is concerned, he remains on the commissioner's exempt list and could still face suspension. But, guys, let's assume that he's going to play some football this year. We don't know how many games it's going to be. But if that's the case, I'm thinking Super Bowl. 2 weeks ago, I was not thinking Super Bowl at all. At all. We got no pass rushers. Well, we kind of do, but none of them are great. And we definitely don't have a great secondary. Now we've traded for Jamal Adams, and it looks like we're going to get Dunbar back at some point. Are you kidding me? This has gone from being like a C secondary, maybe, to at least a B-plus, A-minus secondary. I'm definitely thinking Super Bowl now. I mean, the turn of events for the Seahawks and how lucky they are and how lucky Quentin Dunbar is today, I mean, this is unbelievable. Now, I know not everybody's going to be on the same page with me. And it's, you know, this is one of those things where the news broke only a few hours ago. And could Tom be overreacting? Yeah, absolutely. But for a guy who didn't like the Jamal Adams trade, now I'm loving it. Loving it. Stacy?
Oh.
Well, look at this.
Come to the light,
he
baby.
Made
come
it.
To the light. Yes.
You know, Tom.
Made it through the tunnel.
Tom, I got to say, in theory, I totally get what you mean, and that's all good. But don't forget that last year we thought this was going to be one of the best front sevens in the league. You had Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Michael Kendricks at the time. You had Jadeveon Clowney, Ziggy Ansah, Puna Ford after a great rookie season, and Jaron Reed, who we knew was suspended but was still going to come back after posting, what, 10.5 sacks? We were excited for this. I mean, Jake was out here chest bumping Brock. Not me. That's scary. But just bumping Brock. Everyone was excited for it. And I will say this. First of all, they ended up having the worst production ever in sacks, quarterback hits, pressures, all of that stuff. And some guys still had a great year. Bobby Wagner was still an all-pro. KJ Wright had one of his best career years. But it didn't end up coming together. The first part of this equation is just getting the right guys on the field. And they did that last year. Some of the guys didn't stay on the field. And I think they've done that this year with the news of Dunbar this morning and then the trade for Jamal Adams. That's a check in that category. You've got the right guys on the field. The second part of that equation, though, is that you have to have your best guys on the field when you play and then find the best ways to use them. And that conversation's a bigger one. Does it mean a change in scheme? Does it mean chemistry? I mean, that's a big question that's tough to answer, but that's the part that's up to the coaching staff. What do you think, Jake?
Well, Tom's sitting here saying Super Bowl, and the reason for that being is because just purely based off talent as of right now with where the latest news is with Quentin Dunbar, you look at Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Shaquille Griffin, and Quentin Dunbar, your pieces that you're trying to figure around that in the secondary is Trey Flowers, who's been, you know, he had a rough year too, but he also was a pretty productive player, and he's been a good productive player for 2 years for you. He's a depth piece for you now. Marquise Blair, they're still trying to find a role for him. He's a depth piece. Ugo Amadi. Like, this is a from a talent perspective, the Seahawks have quickly become one of the best secondaries in the NFL. That's not overspeaking. That's not being dramatic. That is very factual in terms of what they are presenting on paper. Now, to Stacy's point, the big aspect about this is how this all comes together. Training camp for the Seahawks and for the Seahawks defense is going to be vital to this group. It's going to be vital to build chemistry. It's also going to be vital for the coaching staff to figure out how to best utilize that talent. And to me, I think that's number one over everything else. How is the coaching staff going to take this talent and maximize it so that it can be one of the best secondaries in the NFL? Because it's fully capable of doing so. And if they are able to do that and effectively do that through training camp, practicing together, learning each other, and really coming together before the season starts, Tom, this secondary has the ability to have the trickle-down effect to make everybody else better, help Bobby Wagner in the linebacking core, and help this defensive line that is not overly impressive in terms of their pass-rushing abilities on paper. So, yes, I do believe that they have every ability to get to the Super Bowl with a secondary of this caliber.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. Look, the stuff about needing training camp maybe more than ever, I agree. But we knew that that was going to be the case. I mean, anytime you acquire new players, that's going to be the case. I'm not sure how any of today's news changes that. I mean, it doesn't really. I mean, whenever Dunbar, now, while he's on the exempt list, he's allowed to be around the team. Is he allowed to participate in practice in training camp?
I don't think so.
Yeah, being on the exempt list, I'm pretty confident that you're not allowed to practice. Okay. But I would have Stacy double check that just to confirm. That's going to be another important element of this, Tom.
Okay, yeah, because as training camp gets going, look, this is important for the Seahawks. It's important for a lot of their young players. But you got to let's widen our scope here a little bit.
Okay.
It's crucial for every single team out there. Every team is dealing with what the Seahawks are dealing with. Every team has young players. Every team has new players. So for guys like Adams, you know, coming here, needing to fit in, the coaching staff figuring out how they're going to use anybody, whether or not they'll rework their scheme a little bit, fancy it up, that's normal. I'm not looking at that as if it's putting the Seahawks at a disadvantage. If Dunbar is not allowed to practice at all, that's a bit of a problem, but it's not like he's a rookie either. He's a cornerback. Okay, their scheme is not that complicated. He can go out, I'm assuming he can go out there and just do his job whenever it is he comes back. And by the way, he may not get suspended at all. Okay, if he's cleared legally here, he may not get suspended at all. Now, I know Roger Goodell isn't the judge, jury, and jailer anymore, or executioner, if you like, all on his own. I think that there's a different committee that handles that now. There might be, might not be. We can check on that, too. Either way, they could still look at Dunbar and say, look, man, you were at least present at this robbery, or you were in a situation you shouldn't have been in. Defend the shield, right? Mm-hmm. Don't make the shield look bad. When people look at Quentin Dunbar, they're still going to think like he was involved in something that he shouldn't have been, even if he was not legally guilty of anything, okay? And that's an image problem for the league. They may look at that and say, you know what, we're going to punish you 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, something like that. But the idea that he's going to be able to come back, I'd be shocked if he were suspended the whole year. So the idea that he's going to come back and be part of this secondary, it's like getting an injured player back. It's like getting another free agent that's already happens to be on your roster that nobody else got a crack at. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I would also be shocked if he were suspended for the full year. And don't forget that a player doesn't have to be charged for Goodell or the NFL to find that they violated the personal conduct policy. Jaron Reed was not charged, never convicted of anything, didn't serve any kind of jail time, but he was suspended for 6 games. I wouldn't expect like the 8-game suspension Antonio Brown was dealt, but I think it's within the realm of possibility that you could see, like, what if it's a 2-game, what if it's a 4-game suspension for Dunbar, but it certainly helps him that he wasn't charged. Jake, I'll let you go because I know you have something good to say, but right before we do, I'm going to answer your earlier question. How it'll work for Dunbar and any player on the commissioner's exempt list is that he's paid as if he were on the active roster, but he won't count toward the active roster limit. He is not allowed to practice with the team or even attend games, which we don't have any preseason games, so no worries there. But he is allowed to be at the facility for meetings, so and to work out and to receive treatment. So presumably, he'll be permitted to be there for Seahawks training camp. If he's not already there right now, he just won't be able to practice with the team.
Well, and that part of it is really important because, to me, you know, Tom, it's not just as easy. And yes, every other NFL team has the same type of questions. Can they build? Can they improve? Can they add new wrinkles? Can they add successfully new players that they brought in? So the Seahawks are not the only ones dealing with this, but to me, it still is a big question. It's a big question about what Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. decide to do with this defense. Do they highlight the secondary, or do they continue to double down on, hey, base defense, and we're going to try and get K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, and Bruce Irvin on the field all at the same time? It depends. There's a lot of different ways that they can go. And based off of what they did last year in 2019, they had a very conservative approach to their defense. And do they continue to go along with that? Or do they change based off of the added pieces that they have acquired over the offseason? All those things are really important. And that building of chemistry amongst these guys and the decision-making that this defensive staff makes is going to be really critical to maximize the talent of this group. Now, do I trust Pete Carroll to do it? Yeah, but also, you know, Ken Norton Jr., as a defensive coordinator, the history hasn't been great. And I don't know, again, if you make another addition to your defensive line, you're at the point where I don't think you can hide anymore. You need to produce here. So I don't know if I'm sitting here willing to just say that I think this is all going to come together. I think they still have a lot of work ahead of them, and I think that they can get it done. But it's going to be really critical for them over this next month to get it all figured out.
What I wouldn't give to get Quentin Dunbar on the huddle this year.
Oh, can you imagine?
So Quentin, what the heck were you doing? That would be my first question. Ay-yi-yi. All right, let's hear from Pat Leonard, who had the news this morning. He works for the New York Daily News. Cut number one, explaining what happened here.
Even though it doesn't surprise me that Dunbar isn't being charged because of the recanted statements in their presence, it doesn't surprise me, but it still alarms me in the sense that there really is so much, including this payoff cover-up situation. You know, obviously, it wasn't Baker's attorney whose office these recanted statements happened at. It isn't Baker's attorney's office where $60,000 or $55,000 exchanged hands, allegedly, according to this evidence that showed up in this search warrant. This was Quentin Dunbar's former attorney, who then recused himself from the case, who now is reportedly under investigation by the Florida Bar Association.
Yeah, so that lawyer did his job. He paid off the witnesses, and now they're claiming insufficient evidence. Basically, what that means, there's no witness statements to be able to charge Dunbar. Boy. I mean, there's still so much of this case to go. It's just not going to involve Quentin Dunbar himself. It'll involve his former lawyer, Michael Grieco. It'll involve DeAndre Baker. And who knows what Quentin Dunbar did or didn't do? I mean, again, Goodell may look at this whole thing, or the league may look at this whole thing and say, you know what, this looks shady to me. We think you did something, but, you know, it just so happens that prosecutors don't have evidence because of some shady dealings, so we're going to suspend you. But we shall see. All right, we're going to be coming back to this story every couple of minutes because this is just huge news for the Seahawks today. Right now, three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the we got to protect the kids nonsense.
Evidently, our colleagues Aaron Goldsmith and Dave Sims have referred to Kyle Seager as a potential Mariners Hall of Famer. You guys agree with that? Is that where he's headed, Jake?
Well, it is surprising to hear that just based off of what we've seen over the last few years. But I think Kyle Seager has been one of those guys that despite the struggles and despite him not living up to the big contract that he was given, he has quietly put together a pretty impressive resume. And to be one of only four Mariners all time to get to that home run mark, I mean, that's pretty impressive. So you may have different feelings about it, but I think that he is quietly building his case. And if Seager's going to be around for a couple more years because, hey, he's the veteran on the team and he has a contract that's really difficult to get rid of, then, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being on the part of the Mariners Hall of Fame when it's all said and done.
Yeah, neither would I. You've got that amazing home run record that he hit the other day. Then you've got that he was an all-star and a Gold Glove Award winner. I know that was just in 2014, and it feels like it's been a long time since then. But he's also been fairly consistent, never really dealt with a ton of tough injuries until more recently. I think, too, in a year where you have a lot of young guys that are struggling to stay consistent, he's had a really, really good year. And I still remember when Jake and I had an interview with Aaron Goldsmith and we were asking him about Kyle Seager. And he said, you know, this is still Kyle's team. Kyle's still one of the guys there that's influencing a lot of the kids. And I think Mariners fans see this as a team of the future. And so they look over some of those veterans. But Kyle Seager is in there, one of the best averages, leading the team in RBI. So he's certainly helping them, especially right now.
There's two tiers of Mariners Hall of Famers. There's like the actual Hall of Famers, guys like Edgar, Randy Johnson, Ken Griffey Jr., guys like that. Then there's Jamie Moyer, Dan Wilson, Jay Buhner, Alvin Davis. That's like the tier two guys. Guys who are great Mariners, longtime Mariners, but who wouldn't make the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's probably where Kyle Seager fits. If it were up to me, I might exclude those other guys. I would just go with the really special players like Randy Johnson, Edgar Griffey, and someday Ichiro. But given that guys like Dan Wilson, Moyer, and Buhner are in there, Seager probably will get in. Question two.
Number two.
Totally random guy here that none of you have ever heard of, but I saw this come up on Twitter.
Okay.
Rest in peace, former Yankees second baseman Horace Clark. This is a guy who played for the Yankees during their lean years in the late 60s and early 70s. Okay, but when I give you this stat, your mind's going to be blown.
Okay.
Okay, what's more impressive, throwing a no-hitter or doing what Horace Clark did, breaking up three no-hitters in the ninth all in 1 month?
I have my answer. My answer, no offense to Horace, is throwing a no-hitter. I think throwing a no-hitter is an exceptional accomplishment. It doesn't happen that often. I think what happened here is that how common is it that a team is facing three no-hitters in a single month into the ninth, right? That's pretty insane.
Not common.
I mean, that's still phenomenal. But it's such a minimal chance that could even happen that I wonder how many guys could be able to do that. But that's a really cool accomplishment. But I got to go with no-hitter. No-hitters are really, really tough.
Yeah, I would say no-hitter, throwing a no-hitter as well, because you're not going to be remembered for breaking up three no-hitters. I mean, you said yourself, Tom, we might not know this guy. And we might not know this stat, and that is very true, because I do now, and I didn't know then, but Horace Clark, an absolute dream crusher, a dream killer.
Yeah, seriously.
There's
three
potential players that could have made history here, and he crushed every single one of those dreams.
Okay, so Horace Clark, the worst guy.
Well, think about the pressure.
Yeah.
That he's under up there three times in a month. It's like, oh my God, I'm in this situation again. My team's about to be no hit. I got to save the day once. I got to save the day twice. I got to save the day three times. Save my team from being humiliated in the span of a month. That's unbelievable. I'm giving my vote to Horace. Next.
Number three.
Okay, now, if you think about the timeline of the Seahawks offseason here, remember that they got Dunbar, and then he got in trouble, and then they got Jamal Adams, and then just this morning, Quentin Dunbar got off. So, would they have gone after Jamal Adams if Dunbar had never been in trouble in the first place, Jake?
Yes. Yes, they would have, because here's the thing. The way the Seahawks organization works, and we hear it all the time, every offseason, man, John Schneider, they were in on this deal. They seek out every single possibility. They do their research. They do their digging. They go over and beyond in every aspect. But there's always going to be one or two players.
What do you think, Stacey? Would they have all gone right after Adams?
Jake, let us know if we get you back. Yes, I agree with Jake. I don't know if this is what he was going to say, but what I was going to say is we knew that he was working on this for a really long time.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yep, we got you.
Okay. I have no idea what happened there. the beauties of working from remote. But basically, they work on one or two players throughout the entire offseason. Now, they don't always come together, but there's a splash move that John and his staff are constantly working on. Last year it was Jadeveon Clowney. This year it's Jamal Adams. But they were in on Jamal Adams well before the draft and worked through him all the way after. So, yes, Quentin Dunbar would not have affected their plans to try and work through Jamal Adams and try and get him as a member of the Seattle Seahawks. He was one of those guys that they had specifically targeted as their big offseason acquisition.
Yeah, I agree. I think, too, you don't trade two first-round picks lightly. This is something you have to consider for a really, really long time, particularly a team like the Seahawks that wants as many bites at the apple as they can possibly get. I'm sure it really, really hurt for John Schneider to part with those picks. I remember him telling Brock and Salk during an interview, oh, man, it must have been 2 years ago, where he had to put Dwayne Brown's name on a second-round pick because he couldn't stand not having a pick there. So this had to be something that he's been mulling over for a while. And I agree with Jake. I think it was something that they had been planning. And the fact that Dunbar got in trouble was a wrench in the plans. And the fact that he's now not being charged is just kind of a pleasant outcome for all of that.
I'm going to take Jake's word on this because he usually has a pretty good idea of like the inner workings of what's going on here. But the second Dunbar got in trouble, I wonder if they didn't ramp up their efforts to get Adams. I mean, maybe is that where the two first-round pick thing came in? I mean, we talked about maybe it's desperation. I mean, they definitely, you have to acknowledge, they needed Adams more once they knew that Dunbar was in trouble.
Like, oh, no
question. If they were already pursuing Adams even before any of that, Once Dunbar's issues came to light, they probably said to themselves, okay, well, now we really need him, so let's make sure we get him. You know, let's not nickel and dime the Jets. Let's just give them what they want and go. It's my thought anyway. All right, I'm sure Mike Salk's excited to get Dunbar back too. We'll talk to him next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Insufficient evidence is what is clearing Quentin Dunbar of all the accusations that were hurled at him regarding that armed robbery attempt that DeAndre Baker is now still in trouble for. But we go to Mike Salk here on the hotline, and I want to ask Mike, how does the knowledge that they're probably going to be getting Quentin Dunbar back at some point, if as long as he's not suspended the whole year, how does that change the way you think about this team and its Super Bowl aspirations?
Can I answer that question second, Tom? Because I want to just start with the first two words you uttered there coming back. And I totally agree. They're the key to this. Insufficient evidence. I think you hit the nail on the head. And if I were hosting the show, I would have come back and said the exact same two words to start the segment. That is a very interesting phrase. I'm happy for the Seahawks. They're going to get their guy. And we'll get into it in a minute, how important that is for them in their season. You know, if you ask me, do I believe Quentin Dunbar was involved in something? I still believe he was. I'm happy for him and for the Seahawks that they're not going to be able to prove that he was and that there was insufficient evidence. This is not an innocent, he's innocent until proven guilty in the eyes of the law, and that's what will carry the day here. He doesn't have to be innocent until proven guilty in my mind or in anybody else's. I'm gonna kind of continue to believe what I believed an hour ago, and this is not going to change my mind on that. But all of that being said, for the Seahawks, this is great. I mean, this, if he is the player that they think they were acquiring, and they're going to pair him with Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers and Diggs and Jamal Adams and Marquise Blair, not to mention Ugo Amadi, all of a sudden you have built arguably the best secondary in football. That's really impressive. Now, they're doing it without, you know, an unbelievable shutdown, you never get it past him cornerback. But the depth in that secondary, the multiple ways you can utilize all of those players who are incredibly flexible, four of them at least were safeties at some point in their career, including college, that is an unbelievable weapon for them to use defensively.
Now, Salk, you talk about weapon, you talk about talent. To me, you know, purely based off the talent, the Seahawks have one of the best in the NFL at this point. Training camp's going to be huge for them. And my question to you is, do you have the confidence that this coaching staff, Pete Carroll, and more importantly, Ken Norton Jr., who is the defensive coordinator here, is going to be able to utilize that talent in the best way?
I think so. I think Pete's good at this. And I know that last year's not necessarily the best example. People are going to point to it and say, oh, they played too much base defense and they weren't creative enough. And that may be the case. I think it was an issue of Pete looking at the personnel he had and saying this is actually the best way to salvage whatever we can defensively. And then what did they do in the offseason? They set about trying to improve it, especially in the secondary. I don't think we're going to see that same base defense all the time. If they do, I think you will have wasted some of those, you know, really interesting players that you've got in the secondary now, especially when the front line of your defense is now the weaker part. So, yeah, I think Pete is a great secondary coach. That's what he's known for, probably above all else. We've seen what he's able to do creatively with safeties in the past, with Cam, with Earl, going back to Troy Polamalu, et cetera. This has always been a Pete Carroll staple. So, yeah, I think they're the perfect coaching staff to try to figure that out.
Hey, Mike, I want to go back to some of your comments from the open. Do you then still think that he'll be suspended?
I think it's possible. I mean, again, the NFL does not need to abide by the rule of law. It's not innocent until proven guilty in the NFL's book. So, you know, if you go back to Ben Roethlisberger, obviously he was never convicted of rape, but the NFL still suspended him for an awfully long time based on their own review of the case. It's very possible still that Roger Goodell and his team looks through the complaints that were made, not just the initial complaint, but also the secondary idea of paying off witnesses and sees the lawyer change and everything else, and says that regardless of whether there was sufficient evidence to charge him, that there is sufficient evidence for them to suspend him or say that it was conduct unbecoming to the league. So I don't know that the Seahawks are out of the woods, but certainly the level of suspension would be a lot lower than it would have been if he had been charged, convicted, etc.
Jake was telling us before that he thinks that the Seahawks were pursuing Adams the entire way, regardless of what happened with Dunbar. But once Dunbar got in trouble, let's assume that that's true about their pursuit of Adams. Do you think that that made them ramp up their efforts to get Adams and made them desperate enough to give away two first-round picks?
I think it's a compelling question. I don't know the answer to it right now, and I'm guessing that reporters kind of dig into that here over the next couple of weeks and months, but I think it's a very fair question to ask. I think they would have done the Adams deal either way. I think what they needed at the end of the day was premier playmaking talent, and he is that. They needed a premier alpha male, you know, leader in the locker room kind of guy, and he is that. They needed somebody who would give them edge, and he is that. So I think that you make that move regardless of whether or not Quentin Dunbar is going to be available to you or not. And by the way, he still may not be available for the entire season. We just talked about that. So Tom, I think it's a really fair question to ask that I don't know that we can answer definitively right now, but I think they did the right thing either way.
So Mike Silver came on 710 ESPN and dropped a big bomb in terms of just updating where the Seahawks are at and who they are pursuing. He said that Jadeveon Clowney is out of the picture right now and that they are actually pursuing Everson Griffin or Clay Matthews. Who would you prefer the Seahawks go after?
Both. Is that possible? Can I get both of them?
No, Salk, you can't get both.
I'm honestly basically good with either one, Jake. I mean, I don't know that I know enough a difference between them to be able to tell you which one is a better fit for their defense. This is a cop-out answer, but my answer would be get one, whichever one you identify is going to be a better fit and more productive in the pass rush. And I can't tell you who that is. You got to go through and understand Griffin's personality and his dedication and how interested he is in playing and where his mentality is at right now, just based on his past. You got to go through Clay Matthews' age and his commitment right now and how productive a player he can still be at this age and of his career. So that takes a lot of you know, unknowns that I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer. But I'm good with them getting either one just on principle because they need another pass rusher and two guys who have had as much success as they've had. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in the Madden one. And by the way, add one of those guys, keep Dunbar around all of a sudden, and just add one more defensive lineman piece. And all of the negative commentary we've been nonstop about this defense throughout the offseason starts to come together right before training camp, which was always sort of a caveat. Each time we said their defense is going to be bad on paper, it was with the caveat, well, let's wait and see. This is what it is right now on paper and not what it is day one of training camp or the regular season. You add, let's say, Everson Griffin and a defensive lineman for some depth because right now they're missing that inside, and Jamal Adams and Quentin Dunbar. Man, all of a sudden your defense looks completely different than it did a month or two ago.
One last quick one here, Mike. Is Kyle Seager on his way to being a Mariner Hall of Famer?
He probably is. I know that became sort of in vogue here over the last week and with his 200th home run. I mean, you know, he is quickly entering that territory. He's an interesting player to look at because he's polarizing. There are ways to look at Kyle Seager's career and say he has been steady. He has consistently, you know, over time been a performer. He's been one of the better players on this team, and the numbers kind of speak for themselves. On the other hand, watching him game in, game out, I think some of that inconsistency has shown up, and there have been some key moments, including, you know, where he kind of walked away from the team a few years ago in the middle of a playoff push that others will point to, not to mention the large contract that I don't know that he's fully lived up to, and say that there's a lot of disappointment and inconsistency there. At the end of the day, I'm probably not the right person to answer because I'm not the biggest Kyle Seager fan, but I certainly wouldn't be able to object to him becoming a Mariners Hall of Famer. I mean, I think the numbers are there and probably are starting to warrant it right now.
I think that makes you the right person to ask because you're not
that
big
maybe.
Of a fan.
I mean, I'm not his biggest fan. I think a lot of the leadership that he is credited with is over-exaggerated. I don't know that he's always been the best leader for the team. I also think it was challenging for him. We talked about it on the podcast this week to be there in hitting groups and practice and batting practice with guys like Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano, because I think he tried to turn himself into a power hitter to be with those guys and hit as much for as much power as they did. And I don't think that's really Kyle Seager's game. I think what we've seen this year is the perfect version of him. A guy with doubles power, gap to gap, driving in runs, not trying to do too much, just sort of able to relax. And the version that we're seeing right now, man, that's a Mariners Hall of Famer for sure. I love what I've seen from Kyle Seager so far this season.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
You too, guys. See ya.
Still a couple of guys out there the Seahawks should be taking a look at. We're going to hear from Dave Wyman on maybe one of them. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, Quentin Dunbar basically being freed. I know he was never incarcerated, but as far as we're concerned, he's free to come back to the Seahawks, probably if he gets off that commissioner's exempt list and doesn't get a suspension. But we're still waiting on all of that news. But for now, because of insufficient evidence, Quentin Dunbar will not be charged. In the meantime, there's still a couple of players who are out there that the Seahawks could be taking a look at. We heard from Mike Silver yesterday that he thinks that Everson Griffin would be a better option than Clay Matthews. But what do you guys think on that? Those two guys are on the older side, 32 for Griffin, 34 for Clay Matthews. Who do you think is the better option, Jake?
For me, I really believe that Everson Griffin is the best option here. If you play cut number four here, Dave Wyman kind of explaining what Everson Griffin was able to do for the Minnesota Vikings and why they were able to have such a successful pass rush, helping free up Danielle Hunter.
Griffin, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, I on the other side of him this year, if you look at Danielle Hunter, this last year, I mean, he's one of those guys that makes it possible for guys on the other side to rush the passer. Danielle Hunter in Minnesota has had 28 sacks the last two seasons. And I think a lot of it is because of the play by Everson Griffin on the strong side.
Now, when you talk about can Bruce Irvin step up, can Benson Mayowa bring production, Daryl Taylor, Alton Robinson, right? Those guys on the edge, you need a proven edge rusher. And that's exactly what Everson Griffin is. He's a guy who can play the Leo spot. He can even play the five technique. And that's what he's been playing for the Minnesota Vikings. And then when they go into nickel personnel, he plays more of a edge rush defensive end type of player. So he brings a lot of that dynamic facet to it. And you look at statistically, even at the age that he is, 32 years old, he is still a highly productive player. Eight sacks, you know, tackles for loss, I mean, you name it. I think Everson Griffin is that all around good veteran player that would be a massive boost and a more solidifying player to this defensive front.
Yeah, I also go Griffin in this case. He just has a heads up about his contract. So his previous contract averaged 14.5 per year. He restructured 10.9 to be 6.4 million to help clear out salary cap. But that 6-7 million salary that people are seeing isn't necessarily reflective of what his asking price would be. So it's not like he's necessarily on the cheap. But certainly a cheaper option than Jadeveon Clowney, just given the fact that he's a few years older. Matthews obviously being even older than Griffin. But I think I lean toward Griffin and the pressure that he can bring. Matthews is still a great player. They both had the same number of sacks last year with eight. But Griffin had 24 quarterback hits, 11 for Matthews, which is still good. But Griffin kind of fills that role, like Jake said, that Leo spot. He's versatile. He can play everywhere. But that's the spot where the Seahawks needed help heading into the draft, even heading into free agency. So he would certainly add a veteran presence there. I think the interesting conversation becomes people that say, well, wait a minute. You already shelled out for Jamal Adams. Why not just continue to shell out for someone better? Like, I'm going to use an analogy that I don't know how many people are going to be able to get what I'm saying here, but hear me out. If you spend, Jake's already laughing, I worked at a nail salon when I was in college, and one of the estheticians, they do skincare, used to have this saying that she would tell all of her clients when she was like, why would you spend $300 getting your hair done or colored or doing whatever it is to it, and then spend $4 on shampoo? So I know that that's not an analogy everyone can get behind, but what I'm saying is, why would you shell out two first-round picks, mortgage your future, you're paying Bobby Wagner so much money, Russell Wilson so much money, why would you shell out this much and not just get the best pass rusher available if you can afford it? I get that argument that people are making. I think I'd still like to see Everson Griffin in here, but I very much sympathize with the sentiment people have about, like, why not just get Clowney? You've come this far.
Stacey, first of all,
yes,
I fully understood that analogy.
I believe it,
Tom.
Thank you.
That was a terrific analogy.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I think good.
Did she just, you know, the word that I've heard a lot is mansplain. Did you just woman-splain to us about hair and yeah, wow. Okay.
Well, were you guys going to know what an esthetician was?
I know what an esthetician is any day. See, if I were to make that analogy, I would have made it something like, if you're going to buy a Lamborghini, why elect not to get the sealant for another like $100 a year that protects?
That's the thing. You've already gone this far. If you're going to spend thousands of dollars on a really cool guitar, why not get a nice amp too? Like, you're going to ruin the sound quality. That, you know what
you
I mean? So I think
way.
That if
just,
you have
just
the salary,
Tom's
space,
language.
I know. But I'll say that, and then I will say the Seahawks would have to make some kind of costly cut to make room for Clowney at the price he wants. So taking that route could mean that you go without a guy like KJ Wright. So
well,
it comes with its sacrifices.
It does. And coming back to it is, for me, yes, I would love to see Everson Griffen on this roster. But ultimately, Clay Matthews is a good player. The reason why I wouldn't want to bring Clay Matthews on this team is because I view him as the same player as Bruce Irvin. It's a linebacker who can play the edge, who can be a very good pass rusher in certain situations. He brings flexibility. He had 8 sacks last year after also having to spend 3 or 4 of those games sidelined with a broken jaw. So obviously he's still very productive as well. But, you know, Stacey highlighted Everson Griffen's ability to get QB hits. Mm-hmm. But more importantly to me, guys, I'll be happy with either player because I think that they will help in a lot of different ways. But what I hope doesn't happen is you shell out so much money that you're talking about here that you don't get a defensive tackle. To me, I think as of right now, the biggest hole on this defense is their defensive tackles, is their depth. I like Puna Ford. I like Jaron Reed. But when you have a good defensive line, you build a rotation. You build depth. You build quality. And right now, we don't know if it's good or not, but they've built rotational depth on the defensive at the defensive edge rush positions, Leo and the 5 technique. I don't want to see them shell out so much money that they cannot get Damon Snacks Harrison, Marcel Darius, Mike Daniels, Tim Jernigan, one of those 4 players. I think that's the bigger need for this defensive line. If you can add Matthews, Everson Griffen, plus a defensive tackle, I mean, man, we're talking about a heck of an offseason.
Can I just say that my gut feeling on adding aged pass rushers is not a good one, especially when we're talking about a guy like Clay Matthews who's getting onto his 3rd team. I think sometimes when you end up in you're on your third team and you're getting older, you know that the end is near. I think sometimes the effort kind of goes, and if you start to break down a bit easier, you know, there's a greater chance of injury. I don't know. I look at guys who, like, Dwight Freeney came in here. He was okay. Then they had to let him go. I have a bad feeling about both of these guys.
Don't have a bad feeling about both?
I feel fine about Everson Griffen. I mean, I don't feel bad about Matthews, but if I have to choose, I would be very fine with this team signing Griffen.
I feel great about Snacks Harrison.
Well, yeah.
Just to Jake's point. Because they do need more depth there. Good.
But he is an aging player that has been on, now he's going to be on multiple teams. So I think it kind of goes both ways there. But I do think that defensive tackle is the position that they need the most help at right now.
All right, we're going to ask Michael Bumpus that exact question, plus his reaction to Quentin Dunbar. Suddenly, kind of available. 710 ESPN Seattle.